Please don't call. Get out from that apartment. You can't take. You
call the police.
I will call the police.
Please do. See how long it takes for them to show up.
That was our friend Jonathan Cho. One of the best street journalists around anywhere, Jonathan Cho, clashing with a staffer from the Downtown Emergency Services Center, a place that is renowned for having a bevy of 911 calls. We'll get into all that a little bit later. It's a very busy show again this morning. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI, 8th day of January. Hope you are doing well. We'd love to hear from you. You can call or text us at 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. We have the latest update for you, the wildfires burning in Pacific Palisades. Now there are three separate fires, and it's pretty bad. It's pretty grim. It's also, the height of irony, we have snow falling, ice problems blanketing the East Coast, actually the whole eastern half of the United States, and we have wildfires in California where less than an inch of rain has fallen since May.
Yeah, and these are normal. We've heard about these since we were kids. Mm-hmm. I was always told late September till about May, we have these Santa Ana winds. They usually last for a few days. I never heard what caused these fires.
That's one thing I have not heard yet either.
No.
Is it the wind that kicked up that knocked down a power line? Power line sparked something? Yeah. I haven't heard. Did somebody have a backyard fire going?
There are now three separate fires building,
burning, right.
Burning and building, frankly. 0% contained. Mm-hmm. They have not isolated a cause.
Yeah, and this is kind of like around here. We get those winds blowing from eastern Washington. They blow easterly, like during the wintertime, and blowing the Puget Sound. That's what the Santa Ana winds are. Where's that 747 dive bomber fire machine?
The wind conditions preclude doing that.
They need
the wind to settle down before they can get anything, helicopters, any sort of planes up in the air to start to hit these spots that are burning.
Yeah,
that's one of the other problems they have is it's very risky dumping water from the air because the winds are so volatile.
Yeah, it might not hit what you're aiming at anyway, and then that would be kind of a waste of a flight.
That's 80 to 100 mile per hour.
And news reporters are wearing ski goggles because embers are flying through the air a lot like snowflakes.
Yes.
And, the wind is driving all of this.
Which might have been a cause in the other fires that are
exactly happening. Right. And then the wind pushes the embers to the next property or the next batch of trees. I'm looking at video. I believe it's on Sunset Boulevard. And this seems to be, kind of the West Hollywood area. It says, video shows bulldozers shoving cars that were abandoned on Sunset Boulevard near the Palisades fire. One driver tells me he had no choice. Firefighters were telling people to get out of their cars and run.
Just head to the ocean.
Exactly. The head out. And this is something else that I heard an explanation on Fox and Friends as I was watching a little bit of that this morning. Some of these neighborhoods in around the, we'll call it the L.A. area. It might not be the L.A. city limits specifically, but some of the adjoining towns. There's usually only kind of one road in, one road out. And then, of course, you can't go north or east because that's the direction
it's
that the
fire.
Wind is coming from.
Yeah.
And the conditions there are going to be worse. So really the one way out is why they had to resort to using bulldozers to push cars out of the way because they were surrounded by flames.
So all this chaos happening right now in California, when we have more updates, we will pass them your way. I've got more info to tell you about what is going on, some interesting and unsettling anecdotes about what is happening in Pacific Palisades. Pacific Palisades, let's see, the Beach Boys made Pacific Palisades famous in one of their songs.
Mm-hmm. A lot of groups did, yeah.
It's where the Reagans lived. Yeah. between when he was governor of California and when he was elected president. It's a nice area. And a lot of, I think, 30,000 people under evacuation orders. So, like I said, when we hear more, we will let you know.
One other item to add to this, winds are going to be strongest today. They'll drop down a little bit tomorrow and a little bit more on Friday. But forecasters are saying Saturday is the time really when the winds will calm down enough that they might be able to do more to address what's burning and what's on fire.
Yeah, and when we say winds, we're talking 80 miles an hour.
Fox was reporting there was a 99-mile-an-hour wind gust somewhere.
Mm-hmm. High fire danger, Long Beach, they're saying right now, which is really strange. L.A., the actual city.
I mean, Long Beach is a pretty far away from Pacific Palisades, isn't
right.
it?
Right, yeah. But now they're saying
it's
all
like the
that
opposite
region.
Corner of town.
They just updated a map. I just saw it moments
Malibu?
Ago here. Yeah.
Malibu is in danger?
Yeah.
So this is going to be the worst fire in California in terms of threats to safety and lost homes and buildings.
And cell phones, got to say it, John. Well, cell phones, you're trying to get a hold of loved ones and whatever in those areas. Don't be surprised if the networks are just jam-packed and maybe hold off till a quieter time of the day and wait till you hear from your relative calling you up here in Seattle.
But it's going to be the worst in at least 15 years and maybe longer. So we pray that things get better for the people of Pacific Palisades sometime soon. It is the Wednesday, January 8th edition of the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. And you know what that means. Our first legendary lyric contest of the new year now underway. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. You know how this contest works. I give you a lyric from a classic song. And when you hear us play that lyric going in or coming back from commercial break, just be the 10th caller. And some great prizes await you.
Yeah, and all you got to do is say, I heard it. If you want to tell us the name or the title of the artist, that's fine, too. That's just bonus. Daniel's Broiler, they're on for another year, I think, here, John. Just USDA Prime Steak, specialties with the chicken, the fresh seafood. If you want to impress people, how great the food is in Seattle and a real icon, Daniel's Broiler. Have a look at the website. You'll see what I'm talking about. Four locations here on the east side here, Long Lake Union, downtown Seattle as well here, danielsbroiler.com. And then, John, we're adding to that, KVI here.
Yeah.
I want you to join us at the inauguration watch party.
Yeah, almost at KBSG.
I almost
How
did,
many years
I,
ago
I,
is that?
I don't know. Well, I just had an anniversary thinking
it
back
happens.
Here.
It
Ran
happens.
Into a couple people. More on that later. KVI. I did it again. KVI. I want you to join us at the inauguration watch party at Stimpy's Sports Bar and Grill. Breakfast served all day. That means they've got a good breakfast when you know that is true about a restaurant. You get three special VIP seats to watch Donald Trump become the 47th president of the United States with a live broadcast. By the way, you can get some tickets if you want to join us. And last I heard with Young Zach, they're going quick, KVI.com. And John will be talking about that more.
Yes, we have limited seating for this.
If you're interested, I would suggest getting a ticket sooner rather than later.
We've been wanting to do an event down in South King County for a long time, and we thought, hey, how about, you know, kind of like working class tribute to Donald Trump taking the oath of office. So that's going to happen again on Monday, January 20th. The doors open at 7 a.m. We will already be there broadcasting. So live broadcast, breakfast buffet, coffee and all that, some KVI swag for the listeners. And tickets are just $35 a piece. That covers everything except your alcoholic drinks if you need a Bloody Mary. The only people who are going to be really drinking heavily that morning, though, are Democrats.
And you have to be 21? Is that
so
what we
You do
heard?
Have to be 21.
Okay.
And so tickets are going fast, and we're limited to, I think, 100 people. So this isn't, you know, like the KVI events where we can have thousands. This one's kind of limited. If you are interested, go to KVI.com. That's KVI.com. And right across the top, it says Inauguration Watch Party. Just click on that, and there's all the details you need. It's going to be, again, in Kent at Stimpy's Bar, Sports Bar and Grill. Breakfast buffet. Okay.
Stimpy's also has a unique claim to fame.
Well,
they were one of the first businesses to push back on the COVID lockdowns and shutdowns.
They made a name for themselves. That's where I first heard the name. Okay. So here is your lyric. This is going to be a tough one for you. This is going to be a tough one. But see if you can locate somewhere in the recesses of your mind this lyric. I'm 5 years old. It's getting cold. I've got my big coat on. I hear your laugh and look up smiling at you. See, I told you.
It's not a Christmas song.
No, no.
It has maybe some indications of that time of year or that type of moment, but it's not a Christmas song.
It's a moment in every child's life. I'm 5 years old. It's getting cold. I've got my big coat on. I hear your laugh and look up smiling at you. We'll explain that song when we crown a winner. When you hear that lyric going in or out of commercial break, be caller number 10. And maybe not only win these prizes, but perhaps radio legend Mark Christopher put together a KBSG Classic Hits.
You'll find out why I was thinking my alma mater of stations coming up.
Okay. It is a quarter after six this morning. The flames that broke out yesterday evening near a nature preserve are in the inland foothills northeast of Los Angeles spread so rapidly that staff at a senior center had to push dozens of residents in wheelchairs down the street to a parking lot. Another second blaze that had started hours earlier ripped through Pacific Palisades neighborhoods, including a hillside area along the coast dotted with celebrity residences and memorialized by the Beach Boys in their hit song, Surfin' USA. One resident, Cherise Wallace, was unaware there was a fire burning around her until her sister called, right at the moment that a helicopter made a water drop over her house when it was still safe for helicopters to make water drops. I was like, it's raining, she said. And her sister said, no, it's not raining. Your neighborhood's on fire. You need to get out. Phil already told you about the traffic jam on Palisades Drive, famous drive, prevented emergency vehicles from getting through, so they had to bring in a bulldozer to push abandoned cars to the side to create a path. One resident, Kelsey Trainer, said, we looked across. The fire had jumped from one side of the road to the other side. People were getting out of their cars with their dogs and their babies, their bags. They were crying and screaming. Fires at higher elevations were preventing utility crews from getting water to refill tanks. A third wildfire started late last night and prompted evacuations in Sylmar, which is a community in the San Fernando Valley. That's the northernmost neighborhood in L.A. Strong wind gusts in some of the highest terrain and exceptionally dry relative humidity levels guarantee that the fires and the damage will continue growing throughout the day. The LA Fire Department, completely overwhelmed, has taken the rare step of putting out a plea for off-duty firefighters to help. This at a time when firefighting aircraft are not able to take to the sky because of wind conditions. The governor of California said that the state had deployed more than 1,400 firefighting personnel to combat the blazes. Joe Biden had to cancel plans to travel to Riverside County, that's more east, inland, from the areas where the fires are doing so much damage. He was going to be announcing the establishment of two new national monuments in California. He remains in L.A., where the smoke is clearly visible from his hotel. 13,000 structures were under threat as of an hour ago. Flames have jumped Sunset Boulevard. They've burned parts of Palisades High School, which you might remember from the 1976 movie Carrie with Sissy Spacek and several other movies and TV shows. And as I mentioned a moment ago, the flames have now spread into neighboring Malibu. So that is where things now stand. And again, we can only hope these conditions improve enough where they can start dropping more water from the air on these fires, or more fire retardant from the air. It is 20 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with the morning's first social media sweep. Once again, your lyric of the week for the Legendary Lyric Contest is as follows. I'm 5 years old. It's getting cold. I've got my big coat on. I hear your laugh and look up smiling at you. Where have you heard that song before? I'll give you one hint. It is by one of the biggest stars of the last 50 years. There you go. One of the biggest stars of the last 50 years. Philip J., right around the corner. It is 6:21. Good morning. It's on Sonny Bono. But that's not our legendary lyric of the day. Our legendary lyric of the day is, I'm 5 years old, it's getting cold, I've got my big coat on, I hear your laugh and look up smiling at you. Where have you heard that lyric before? When you hear us play it, be the 10th caller, and you will be the winner. Get some nice prizes your way. 206-421-5757. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, what is going on in the social media world, which is, again, still rocking over the announcement from the head of, I was going to say Facebook. It's not Facebook. It's Meta.
Meta,
Facebook,
the parent company.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Right.
Okay.
So one of the things I wanted to jump in on was the Lake and Riley Act passing in the United States House of Representatives and now goes to the Senate. In short, this is going to allow federal authorities to get a jump on criminal illegal aliens. And my recollection is that in the last couple of days or maybe the last week, we've had two cases. And I can't remember if one was in New York, but I know one was in Boston where ICE put in a detainer request for illegal aliens who had been charged with crimes in those cities. I think the other one was New York, but I'm sure Boston was one of them. And what did the local officials in those cities do? Because they're sanctuary cities, they refused to honor the ICE detainer. And so this is where the Lake and Riley Act passing in the U.S. House and now going over to the U.S. Senate ends up impacting the situation where you have ICE detainers that are basically denied and ignored by local officials so that we don't end up with another Lake and Riley killed I think there was a 13-year-old in Houston that was raped and killed and defendant yes. Now going to court. I think there was another case in Indiana as well. There was a college student in Iowa a couple of years ago that was out jogging.
A mother attacked in Maryland.
In Maryland, exactly. Mm-hmm. So That whole concept of ICE attempting to get an ICE detainer and a hold so that they can get a hold of that individual charged with the crime, facing charges, and local jurisdictions that are just absolutely ignoring it. One of the other people I follow on social media is an Axios Congress reporter, Andrew Solander, and he posted House Democratic Whip notice tells members that top Judiciary Democrat Jamie Raskin strongly opposes the Laken Riley Act, which the House is voting on today. This was before it passed. And this Axios reporter was saying yesterday that there could be 60 House Democrats that crossed over to vote for it. Not all 60 did, but quite a few did. And I know you've got that story coming up here a little bit as well.
Yep, it's coming right up. I got all the details, the goods on the Democrats, including those from Washington State.
Yep. And then I'm continuing to keep track on other posts related to the Pacific Palisades fire, some of the fire devastation in L.A. and the L.A. area, and I'll compile those for you. I've got a couple set aside that you can plug in here shortly on the show.
And the legislative session getting underway. And when it does, one of the top priorities for the one-party regime is adding more environmental taxes. We will be talking about what their agenda is and how well their agenda is working so far. As the Commute with Carlson continues, it's 6:30. Good morning.
There's going to be an earworm for you and everybody listening right now all day after hearing this with a passing of Peter. Yeah.
And the guy who is singing it, Peter Yarrow, from Peter, Paul, and Mary, died at the age of 86. Lived in the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Again, 86. Passed away. Part of the trio Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Yeah. We lost Mary back in 2009. Paul's still kicking.
And then it was Peter and Paul without Mary.
Yeah. And Paul's still kicking along.
Now it's Paul by himself.
87. Yeah. Earlier you were saying, I was saying KVI and we're doing the legendary lyric and I kept mentioning my alma mater call letters, KBSG. We did a lot of concerts at the Puyallup Fair for a whole bunch of years, a whole staff between myself and Fastlane Phillips. And Peter, Paul, and Mary were there one time. It was very strange. I said, okay, guys, yeah, promote the station, the fun of the fair, what's going on and all that. Do not tell people who we are. Do not say, let's welcome Peter, Paul, and Mary. We don't do that. Peter said that. He says, we don't want to be on a pedestal. We want to be equal to everybody in the audience. So just finish up and say, everybody enjoy the show and walk off. And then they just came walking out and said, hi, everybody, and then started playing.
Ah.
It was different, but again.
By the way, we've got a very patient guest we're eagerly waiting to talk to. Peter Yarrow got into some pretty serious legal trouble taking sexual liberties with an underage girl and was convicted. He was later pardoned. Mm-hmm. You know who pardoned him?
Never knew that part of it.
He was pardoned by President Jimmy Carter.
Interesting.
Who died, of course, last week.
And that's strange how these things come about and encounter.
It is 38 minutes after 6 o'clock. All right. Washington State fancies itself, especially the one-party regime in Olympia, as the greenest state in the union. But facts are stubborn things, and the facts don't quite see it the same way. Here's what I'm talking about. If you look at CO2 emissions, which is carbon emissions, carbon dioxide emissions, Washington not only hasn't reduced them very much, they haven't reduced them at all in the last 12 years. And if you don't believe me, you can definitely believe Todd Myers from Washington Policy Center, which, of course, where we get much of our information and wisdom on all things environmental when it comes to Washington State. Good morning and Happy New Year, Todd Myers.
Happy New Year to you.
Okay, so Tell us what the state of Washington, the departing Inslee administration, doesn't want people to know.
Well, the Department of Ecology is required to put out CO2 emissions data on a regular basis. They are required to have put it out for 2022 through 2023. They didn't do that, but they did put it out through 2021. And what we find is that through the first 9 years of Jay Inslee's administration, CO2 emissions in Washington state increased by 5%. This is a guy who ran for president in 2019, arguing that he was the climate governor and would do for the United States what he's done for Washington state in fighting CO2 emissions. But the data show that through 2021, CO2 emissions had increased, and that's after COVID. So they went down in 2021 during COVID, but then bounced back up. And so we actually are missed our the state's target. We are above the state's 2020 target in 2021, and the EPA data have data showing that we were above it in 2022 in all likelihood. So what it shows is that Inslee administration, for all its talk and bluster about CO2 emissions and fighting climate change, their policies failed badly. And the other part of that that's ongoing is that now we have to meet a goal in 2030. And because of that failure, we are in such a bad position in terms of CO2 emissions, we will have to reduce emissions the equivalent of 3.3 more COVID reductions by 2030, basically in the next between 2022 and 2030. That's not going to happen, or it's going to be incredibly expensive and destructive.
Okay, so how does Washington compare to other states? Are other states actually reducing their output, or are they holding steady, or are they going up at similar or even greater rates than Washington?
Yeah, well, the United States during that same period of time reduced total CO2 emissions. And part of that is because some states switched from coal to natural gas, which reduces emissions. But one of the claims is, well, but you know, Washington state has lower emissions. We have lower per capita emissions. Well, actually, for a period of time, Florida, which had started far above us when Jay Inslee took office, passed us and was lower than us in per capita CO2 emissions. They have since bumped up slightly above us. But Florida reduced far more quickly and much more than Washington state. So Washington state is not a leader. I mean, that's the thing that we hear all the time is that how we're leading on these issues, and we're not. Other states, Florida, the United States as a whole, reduced their emissions while Jay Inslee and Washington state increased emissions.
Why did Florida go down while we were going up? Because if you will, Jay Inslee is seen as, along with Gavin Newsom, maybe Governor Hochul in New York, as the, you know, perfect example of your liberal governance, partisan Democrat. And of course, Ron DeSantis is seen as your example of conservative governance, partisan Republican. Why is Republican Florida making more progress in reducing carbon emissions than blue state Washington?
I think it's hard to pinpoint any one, you know, reason. I think that they took advantage of moving from coal to natural gas to some extent, but that would not have gotten them to lower per capita emissions than Washington state. I think there's some demographic issues. I think there's some economic issues. Look, as you become wealthier, you become more efficient. You find ways to invest in technologies and things like that. So you're spending less money on energy and more money on things that you want. So you're able to do those kinds of things. So I think all of those, there's no single factor. And I think that's an important lesson, which is that Washington state government and, you know, elected officials say, oh, only government can do this. It must be government forcing this to happen. And that's clearly not the case when you see what's happened in Florida and other states where they've reduced their emissions. The other thing that I think is noteworthy is that what these numbers show is that bureaucracy is just not up to the challenge of helping address the environment. And not just because they failed, but because if you're trying to make decisions based on data and your most recent data are 3 years old, that you can't make any rational
decisions. Why is their data 3 years old? You pointed out that Microsoft, which keeps track of its emissions from all of its corporate activities, they have their data out within months.
That's right. So in May of 2024, we knew what their Microsoft put out what their 2023 emissions were for their whole global organization, and not just for Microsoft, but for Microsoft's vendors as well. The reason that Department of Ecology doesn't do it is they don't want to. They don't care. It's not important enough for them to actually get useful data. They could do it if they wanted to. But when I put out this statement, the governor's office got very angry and said, look, we can't do this. We simply just don't have the capacity to do this. Well, that's not an excuse they accept from anybody else. If any other organization said, look, we can't follow the law, and this is the law that they, that Department of Ecology is required to release data through 2023 by 2024. They simply ignored the law and they said, well, it's not possible for us to do it. We don't have the capacity.
Why don't they have the capacity though?
Because they've chosen not to.
Yeah.
They could do it.
That's
right?
Just they it. They do have it. The capacity. They don't have the will because that's they probably correct. Know what the data show.
I'm not sure that's true. I just think that they don't care. I think that they care more about dictating than they do. They know what policies they want. So the data can only get in the way. So I guess that's right. Sort of what, you know, part of what you're
saying. No, that's
saying,
a good point.
Which is that the data don't actually matter to them. They know what they want. But, you know, in Washington state this year, there is a widely reported story that people cannot buy RVs or semi-trucks because such a high percentage of them need to be EVs by state law. And, you know, truckers and RV dealers have said, look, we can't even comply with the law. There's not enough that exists to comply with the law. And the Department of Ecology's response was, sorry, that's the law. But when they have to follow the law and are required by state law to put out data, they're like, well, it's not possible for us. Somehow that argument only works for them and not for the people that they are regulating.
All right, we have 30 seconds left. What is on the horizon for the legislature, if they don't care about results? We see the same thing with homelessness. They want to push programs, but they don't want to keep track of whether the programs work or not. They already know where they're standing. So where do you see Olympia going this month, this legislative session?
Well, I think we're going to see the governor's budget, which I don't think will be adopted, but certainly parts of it will be. He's going to ramp up aspects of and the legislature, I think, will adopt increased spending for some of the programs that have been ineffective. The reason that we missed the targets is because government spending targets things that feel good, not things that work. And you're going to see that in a number of different ways. And so that, I think, is the real problem, is that we waste money on feel good social programs, not things that actually work. And I think that's likely what we're going to see the trend continue, because we don't learn the lesson from these poor data.
Todd Myers, Washington Policy Center. Check out his great work and the work of his fellow scholars and policy specialists at WashingtonPolicy.org, WashingtonPolicy.org. Thank you, Todd. When we come back, our good buddy Lars Larson, our Noon to 3 host, checking in as the Commute with Carlson continues. Talk Radio 570 KVI. I see it, Palisades Park. Are things on fire? The blaze continuing here, and we will have an update for you shortly Right now, got our good buddy Lars Larson, our noon to three host on the commute. How you doing, Lars?
I'm doing well, and I see these people, and it's terrible to see all these homes go up in flames. But every time I see a picture of a house on fire, I think, how much defensible space do they have? Because people in the Northwest know about that. You've got to clear trees and brush and plants and vegetation back from your house, and it's not there. I mean, it's, you know, these are houses that were built with lots and lots of very pretty foliage around them. And the problem is it becomes fuel for a fire when it shows up.
Well, that has definitely happened. And I haven't heard of any deaths yet.
Not yet.
And, you know, crossing my fingers, hoping and praying. But, no, it's a terrible situation. It doesn't help that they seem to have problems with water pressure.
Yeah, water pressure, they are literally, the system is running out of enough water. It's hard to imagine that the fire department would say, we literally don't have enough water coming out. And it's not just a problem with individual hydrants. It's apparently the whole system is being tapped so much that they're not getting the pressure they need to be able to fight the fire. So in some ways, you know how fires go out when there are wildfires out in, you know, forested areas or rangeland, you let them burn out of fuel. Unfortunately, that's not a great option when it comes to cities and people's houses.
And, of course, the alternative of, well, we'll just drop fire retardant or water from the air. That option is shaky at best.
No, the winds are too much.
Winds are too volatile, and so they're in a tough spot, and these fires are 0% contained as of right now.
People in the Northwest, watch that. Clear some defensible space around your house.
It is 55 minutes after 6 o'clock. Thank you very much, Lars Larson. You don't want to miss him every day of the work week from noon till 3 hour number.
Point. We're great at what we do, and we've got the best systems anywhere, and we're no match for Mother Nature at this present moment.
Well, there's your understatement of the year, which is 8 days old so far. The John Carlson Show. That's a reference to what's happening in Pacific Palisades, northern Los Angeles, Malibu. Not a good situation down there. Here's a news reporter, KNBC, calling the destruction now a firestorm.
And this is a firestorm. It is no longer a wildfire. It is no longer a brush fire. Whatever you want to call it, this is now a complete firestorm that we are witnessing. And we are witnessing the valiant and heroic attempts of firefighters to do what they can.
That reporter from KNBC in Los Angeles proceeds to declare that already these fires, the fire, which is really three fires, is the most devastating in Los Angeles ever.
Well, look at just how bad this has gotten, you guys. Look at just how awful this is. This is a moment in LA history that we will never, ever forget, and we hope to never, ever repeat.
All right. The fires started yesterday, and the first broke out in Pacific Palisades, a hillside area. The second broke out Tuesday evening near a nature preserve in the inland foothills that are northeast of Los Angeles. And then we've got a third wildfire that started around 10:30 last night in a community in the San Fernando Valley. Here's a final description about the destruction of the fire witnessed by this reporter.
We have no idea which direction this fire is going to head next. Sunset Boulevard, as we have watched now from the beach, just heading up towards Palisades Village, everywhere you look, you see fire, and you continue to see fire. And I look at that home not only is that home gone, and you take a look at it here with the flames that are going so fast, but you wonder where those flames are going to go next, to which location, to which property, to someone's dream that is going to be lost within just a matter of minutes.
Tens of thousands of residents under evacuation orders. Many, many more than that aren't even waiting for orders. They've already left. Some people left. They were driving and traffic wasn't moving. The fires were coming closer, so they just got out of their cars and hightailed it for the ocean. Hightailed it for the beach. More than 13,000 structures under threat. They've had bad firestorms before. They said that this one would be at least as bad as the one in 2011 that did damage further north in Pasadena and the foothills of the San Gabriel Valley, but they think this one now may be even worse. Fire department captain telling another TV station in LA that firefighters just cannot compete with what nature's throwing at them.
It's hard to see such catastrophic devastation. And where you can't stop Mother Nature at this point. We're great at what we do, and we've got the best systems anywhere, and we're no match for Mother Nature at this present moment. We will get our arms around this. We will be able to salvage stuff, and it's going to be a long 4 or 5 days.
That fire department captain you just heard there is explaining why these wind conditions are so different from most other wind events. You know, this time of year, you get these wild whipping winds from Santa Ana. But these winds are different. There's a twist.
Because this is happening during a very rare January red flag warning.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it is unusual. The time of year, we did have Woolsey late in the year, but I think it's the sustaining winds. They did not die down at night. They actually elevated and increased as I sat out at the Palisades fire all night last night. Mm-hmm. Come 8, 9, 10 o'clock, it just got worse and worse. And it was like, how is this possible? And this morning, the same thing is true. And in Altadena, they're reporting the exact same thing. Out in West Hills, Agora, these winds are insane. So it's like nothing I've seen.
They say the fire embers now resembling a hailstorm.
Now, I was sitting there last night in my vehicle because I couldn't get out at that point, and it looked like a hailstorm of fire, of embers. It was a hailstorm of embers. That's how many there were. So you can imagine in a densely, at least these were blowing off to the beach. Mm. In a densely populated area like the Eaton Canyon area, it's pretty dramatic.
Mm. So what needs to happen right now? What conditions have to be there for fixed wing aircraft and the like to get up in the air and start to fight this fire from above?
Just those winds got to calm down. I don't know what their tipping point is. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but they'll make that assessment. Yeah. And as soon as they can, you know they'll be up.
And then one final clip from TV station KTLA anchor asking or field reporter to count how many buildings are on fire that she could see.
Is there a sense, do you have a sense of how many structures in that Eaton Fire area, that Eaton Canyon area, that you may have just arbitrarily witnessed and said that's at least three right there, or that's at least five structures right there?
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if it's more than 100. It is. You drive down the street and it is every other home. I mean, we're talking massive homes, we're talking small homes. This is a tight-knit community. As you saw on this side, everything's pretty condensed. And so I wouldn't be surprised if it's 100 or hundreds, because of what I've seen burning to Sierra Madre and that whole area, there's no telling. And I hope and pray it's only a couple dozen, but I'm talking massive medical centers that have burned to the ground, nursing facilities, pharmacies, gyms, daycares, potentially schools. And so we drove by not too long ago I saw a four-story building on fire. That's what they're up against. And those embers are just flying to other cities.
So, again, that all this morning, this is going on in real time as we are broadcasting here.
Can I share a map here, John, as you were explaining that, and the burning embers and the so-called fire hail? Okay, so we got the fire at Palisades. That's kind of like northwest, you know, Malibu of Los Angeles. And then you're going to go like maybe east, southeast, all the way past Pasadena, over to Sierra Madre, which he just shared. So that's 43 miles away. Those burning embers are now flying from east, going west in the wind. And then you're going to go east up into the San Gabriel Mountains. We're going to say north of Big Bear, like about 40 miles up near Wrightwood. That's another fire, higher elevation. Those winds burning. Those burning hail embers coming down out of the valley. So it's just like all the sparks coming over all these cities, Los Angeles. There's just fire warnings. And with all the smoke going from Palisades, going south, I'm estimating here almost a 70-mile stretch all the way going south and then going east another 55 to 60 miles. Huge.
That's the extent of what could happen. That's what we are faced with if these winds don't die down and if they're not able to get aircraft up in the air to fight these fires. All right, in the midst of all this chaos and bedlam, we still are able to bring to you, ladies and gentlemen, our first of the year legendary lyric contest every Wednesday. You know how this works. I bring you a lyric from a famous song. And when you hear this lyric going in or coming back from commercial break, be caller number 10, and some nice prizes are coming your way. You've got the Daniel's Broiler gift card, of course.
Yeah, four locations you choose here. Bellevue, downtown Seattle, also there at Leschi and South Lake Union. Just perfect wherever you need to be here for entertaining guests and giving them a true feel of the Northwest. Have a look at their menu here online. Make an online reservation. How about that? Daniel's Broiler. com. Yes, they got the party rooms, too, if you want to have a little get-together and meeting. Think about it for weddings and maybe some graduations here. Add to that, we're going to have KVI and you together at an inauguration watch party at Stimpy's Sports Bar and Grill in Kent. That'll be Monday the 20th here during the morning with a live broadcast. John, this is three special VIP seats to watch Donald Trump become the 47th president of the United States and experience the live broadcast. Might have a microphone on you with 570 KVI. Go to KVI.com, buy tickets. Those are going quick. But three VIP seats you could win.
Okay. And just to clarify here, tickets are going fast. This is for a week from Monday. This is for Inauguration Day. KVI will be broadcasting from Stimpy's Sports Bar and Grill in Kent. We've been wanting to do a South King County event for a long time, and we thought, how better than to celebrate the inauguration of the 47th president? So doors open at 7. The oath of office will be administered at 9 a.m., and then the president will deliver his inaugural address. The event includes a breakfast buffet, a nice one, and coffee, beverages as well. If you want to, all that is covered in your ticket price. $35 for everything, except if you want a Bloody Mary. If you want a little alcohol, that you get to spring for yourself. But everything else is great. And I guarantee when you see these people off to the side watching the president being sworn in, most of them, if they're not elected officials, paid a lot more than $35 for their ticket. And it's cold where they're standing. So this should be a lot of fun, celebrating the inauguration of the 47th president with a lot of people who think the way you do. Details at KVI.com. Or, again, you can be the 10th caller when you hear this lyric and you win three VIP tickets of your own. Here is your lyric. It is from a song Written and sung by one of the biggest stars of the last half century. I'm 5 years old. It's getting cold. I've got my big coat on. I hear your laugh and look up, smiling at you. Yes, I know. It doesn't come to mind right away, does it? I'm 5 years old. It's getting cold. I've got my big coat on. I hear your laugh and look up, smiling at you. I will explain why I picked this particular lyric after we have a contest winner, which we won't have until we play the lyric, which we haven't done yet. Maybe sometime this hour. Not sure. It'll be up to the radio legend, Mark Christopher. It is 17 minutes after 7 o'clock. I've got to play this clip from Jonathan Cho. He, as you know, loves to record his news reports on scene of where he is. He likes to do a lot of live stream video recording. And this time he is recording video. He's on the sidewalk between the front door and where he's standing, trying to speak to a man who appears to be a homeless resident going inside the Navigation Center run by the Downtown Emergency Services Coalition. They are famous for running places that have a lot of 911 calls. That is because of the drugs, the assaults, the strong-arm robberies, et cetera, et cetera. So while he's speaking to this guy, an employee storms out of the doors of the Navigation Center and confronts Jonathan Cho. And here's how it went down.
So you feel like this is a housing issue?
Talking to the guy.
Well, you can't be on our property. And you're not taping me and you're not videotaping me. Goodbye. Go off of our property. Goodbye. Get off of our property. You know what? If I should take that camera and smash it in your face.
Okay, so right now, Jonathan Cho's not on their property. He's on the edge of the sidewalk talking to a guy who was standing outside the center, and then that woman kind of shushed him and got in front of him and is demanding that Jonathan Cho leave. And Jonathan Cho stands his ground.
You can't take...
Call the police.
I will call the police.
Please do. See how long it takes for them to show up.
You got the police right here.
Call
them. Want me to flag
them
down?
Yep. What law am I breaking?
Well, I just wanted you to have information.
Okay, so a police SUV had pulled over, and Jonathan Cho, patiently waits while the police officer patiently explains that when you're out in public, yes, you can be taped. People can take video of you.
I was asking him normal questions, treating him like a human being.
They can just videotape you and without you. Okay, we you don't get what I don't care about no law. I need you to not tape me.
I don't care about no law. I don't want you to stop taping me.
And then
public sidewalk.
Nothing funny about it.
I think it's hilarious. You don't know the law. Thank you, sir. These people don't know the law. I'm sorry. I'm on a public sidewalk.
He's saying thank you, sir, to the officer. While this woman from DESC storms back in to the building. Anyway.
I don't care about no law. I need you to not take me.
That, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, that is the voice of the Seattle Homeless Industrial Complex. That sums up their mood. That sums up their attitude. That sums up their knowledge. And also the fact that they are running a complete failure as a system for helping homeless people get back on their feet again.
Ooh, you don't get what you want.
It's 21 minutes after 7.
Goodbye.
Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with the social media sweep. And then the first major congressional action of the new session in D.C. just began with a new freshman class. The Laken-Riley Act. I'll explain it all and who voted which way. It's a big-time issue. And it's interesting how Washington's delegation voted. You'll know, coming right around the corner. No, it's not our legendary lyric. Our legendary lyric from a song that's not that famous. The artist is extremely famous. Your lyric is, I'm 5 years old, it's getting cold. I've got my big coat on. I hear your laugh and look up, smiling at you. When you hear that lyric going in or coming back from commercial break, be caller number 10. You might win our legendary lyric of the week contest. Right now, Philip J. Vandervoort III with the social media sweep. What's going on in hour number two?
I think something you and Lars Larson discussed a little bit earlier on the show and questions starting to merge about where are priorities when it comes to taxpayer resources in the greater Los Angeles area as it pertains to some of these fires. Now, I'm looking at one post from a guy who seems to be in Pacific Palisades. Nobody would have known who this guy is, but he posted a video driving down the street of some of the fire, buildings burning, things like that, and posted, I just left the hellscape formerly known as Pacific Palisades, where I've lived for 26 years. I'm mad at what I saw. Our politicians have failed us. Unprepared, unimaginative, understaffed, and now overwhelmed. Heads must roll for this disaster. I personally saw 100-plus homes fully engulfed. And somebody else he knows that he tagged mentioned water wasn't working in the fire hydrants. What is happening? And somebody else has posted screenshots of your Google search results. And one of them brings up a Los Angeles Times story headline, lack of water from fire hydrants and Palisades fire is hurting firefighters. And that story was posted 3 hours ago. This was all posted basically around 5 o'clock this morning. So somewhere after midnight, the Los Angeles Times posted that story. And one of the lines in the story says, the hydrants are down, said one firefighter battling the Palisades fires. Crews contend with diminished flows from hydrants. And we talk about the opportunity cost of if you want to spend tens of millions of dollars on something like fighting homelessness based on a situation that you help cause and exacerbate, that's $10 million or $40 million or $20 million that you don't have to bolster fire safety or education or something else. And I think that that's going to eventually be one of the questions that comes up in Los Angeles.
And they're famous for losing billions and billions of tons of water runoff because they don't have a sufficient reservoir system. That's been a controversy for generations in Los Angeles
and
in Southern California.
Exactly. As you've been mentioning, Southern California has been in incredible drought. Conversely, Northern California has been hit with a whole lot of rain of late, and they've been able to refill a lot of reservoirs that they do have in the northern part of the state. And then one other person posted a video clip where they must have been recording off the TV they were watching at their home, but it's some sort of Los Angeles TV report. And the on-camera report includes the image and voice of some sort of L.A. County or L.A. fire captain that says local news, in the TV on-air report, this fire captain from Los Angeles County says that the Pacific Palisades fire started with a very small fire in somebody's backyard. And the response to that on the social media thread that posted this video clip of the newscast is asking, hey, there were all these warnings that the winds were going to kick up, that fire conditions could be dangerous in these winds. Did somebody really have a fire going in their backyard as these wind conditions were going to grow and get so intense that it's turned into the problems that we've got right now in the greater Los Angeles area? So we'll see if that report from that L.A. fire captain ends up being accurate, that this started somehow in somebody's backyard. We'll have to wait and see.
It is 7:30. When we come back, the Lakin-Riley Act, the first foray into tackling illegal immigration, specifically from people who commit crimes while they are in the country. What an eye-opener this vote was. I'll tell you why right after this. We're back to John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. No, it's Boss Skaggs, but it's not your legendary lyric. Your legendary lyric is from a very different song. It was not a huge hit, but it's played in concert when this performer is on tour, and it's one of the biggest stars anywhere.
If I go downstairs right now in the garage, turn on your car, it'll be in your deck right there and probably be on a playlist of sort, I think.
Here's your lyric. I'm 5 years old. It's getting cold. I've got my big coat on. I hear your laugh and look up, smiling at you. And I'll explain why we picked that lyric after we have a contest winner. So far, we haven't played the lyric yet. When you hear it going in or out of commercial break, be caller number 10, 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. The Lakin-Riley Act passed the House of Representatives yesterday. Bill designed to identify and detain illegal immigrants who commit crimes in this country. 48 Democrats joined Republicans, almost all Republicans, to pass the Lakin-Riley Act in the House. Here's Como 4's Preston Phillips.
The Senate is set to take up the Lakin-Riley Act sometime this week, the first bill focused on illegal immigration to pass through the new House of Representatives. So the legislation is named after the Georgia college student who was murdered by a man in the country illegally, previously arrested for theft. The legislation would require illegal immigrants who commit certain nonviolent crimes like theft or burglary to be detained. 48 Democrats voted with Republicans today, including Kim Schreier and Marie Glusenkamp-Perez.
Okay. Last February, Lakin-Riley, 22-year-old nursing student, the University of Georgia, went out for a short run on a trail adjacent to the campus. I mean, it wasn't way out in some heavily wooded area miles and miles away. It was just right off campus. Her body was later discovered near the campus. She had been sexually abused and was brutally beaten. In November, Jose Ibarra, 26-year-old Venezuelan citizen in the country illegally, was convicted of her murder. During the trial, Ibarra was identified as a member of the notorious Tren de Aragua gang from Venezuela. The Lakin-Riley Act was introduced by Republican Senator Katie Britt from Alabama. It passed the House last year, did not get through the Senate, which is under Democrat control. On the first day of the new Congress, where you have Republicans in control of both chambers, the bill was reintroduced and hastily made it to the House floor. The bill would mandate that Immigration and Customs Enforcement, commonly known as ICE, detain illegals accused of theft, burglary, shoplifting, or larceny. The second provision empowers state attorneys general to file lawsuits against the Secretary of Homeland Security if those illegals are not detained. That was the case with Ibarra and several other illegals who have committed vicious, violent crimes. They were arrested for committing lesser crimes, but were released. And either the charges were downgraded or they were dismissed outright. The fact that they were in the country illegally was a non-issue because most of them were arrested in sanctuary jurisdictions, which means they won't help in any way, shape, or form the federal government enforce immigration law. What they're really doing is trying to protect illegal immigration. And then people like Lake and Riley, you know, 22-year-old students, get murdered. There have been a bevy of similar attacks across the country committed on Americans by illegals, mostly the victims of violent crime committed by illegals are other illegals. Are other people who are in the country illegally. So allowing illegal aliens who commit crimes to remain in the country is not only dangerous for American citizens, it's dangerous for everybody, whether they're a legal immigrant who's got a green card or they're an illegal immigrant who's trying to just keep their head down and work and tend to their family. So the bill passed handily in the House of Representatives. The House vote was 264 to 159. 48 Democrats voted with the Republicans. That's only one in four. Only one, in fact, slightly less than one in four.
So would it be safe to say that that passed with more bipartisan support than the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act that the Democrats called it a couple of years ago?
The answer is yes.
Okay.
The House Speaker said after the vote, 159 Democrats just voted against the Lake and Riley Act, voting against detaining and deporting criminal illegal aliens rather than putting Americans' safety first. The Democrats have yet again ignored the demands of the American people for safety and security. All the Republicans voted for it. And in the Senate, it has every Republican senator has co-sponsored it, along with one Democrat, John Fetterman. John Fetterman spoke with Bret Baier after yesterday's House vote. And you'll hear a pause in this audio after Bret Baier asks a question because Fetterman is going to reference 47 Democrats, meaning his fellow Democrats in the U.S. Senate. So this legislation, keep in mind, the Senate has the filibuster, so they need seven Democrats at least to join the 53 Republicans who are voting for the Lake and Riley Act.
To remind everybody that we have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of migrants here illegally that have convicted of crimes. And why, I don't know why, you know, who wants to defend to allow them to remain in our nation?
The answer is three quarters of your colleagues, Senator. Three quarters of his colleagues believe that if an illegal alien, someone in this country illegally commits a crime, they should be allowed to remain in the United States. including burglary, including assault, including, you know, other kinds of, you know, drunk driving, shoplifting, etc. Look at it this way. You heard that another country had a rule that if you were in that country illegally and you, say, shoplifted, they would arrest you, they would punish you for shoplifting, and then they'd kick you out of the country. Would that seem unreasonable? Would it seem unreasonable that if you're somewhere you're not supposed to be and you break the law of where you're at, that they have no right, that they shouldn't be kicking you out? Why not? Why is that unreasonable? Anyway, more from John Fetterman here, the Democratic senator from Pennsylvania.
That. And now, if you're here illegally and you're committing crimes and those things, I don't know why anybody thinks that it's controversial that they all need to go.
Do you think that this was one of, if not the biggest issue for this election?
Well, I think if we can't, you know, there's 47 of us in the Senate, and if we can't pull up with seven votes, if we can't get at least seven out of 47, if we can't, then that's a reason why we lost. That's one of them. That's one of why we lost.
Yeah. That's just being petulantly stubborn. The voters have made it very clear. If you are in this country illegally and you break the law, get out. But that is not what the far left thinks, and it's not what most of the Democrats in the Washington delegation think. There are 10 House members. Remember, they held this House vote yesterday. 10 House members. Two Republicans, Dan Newhouse, Michael Baumgartner, they both voted yes for the Laken Riley Act. So did two of the eight Democrats. Two of the eight Democrats, Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, she represents like the Vancouver area, the third district there on the Oregon border, and Kim Schreier from the 8th congressional district. But Susan DelBene, who headed the Democrats' congressional campaign fund, fell short of the majority that they were supposed to have easily taken. She voted no. Marilyn Strickland, the former mayor of Tacoma, former head of the Seattle Chamber of Commerce, she voted no. Rick Larson, who knows better, from the 2nd District that runs from Mukilteo up to the Canadian border, he voted no. So did Emily Randall, but she's hard left. Adam Smith, who is not hard left, and he also knows better, he voted no. And, of course, Pramila Jayapal, who did more than any other member of Congress to elect from our state to elect Donald Trump. Not that she wanted to, but, again, that was just the impact of her left-wing activism within the House of Representatives. They all voted no. DelBene, Strickland, Larson, Randall, Adam Smith, and Pramila Jayapal. So talk about not getting it. We got a long ways to go. Long ways to go for the Democrats to show that they were listening to what the American people were telling them in November. If they're going to be slow learners, that's fine. I don't mind winning another few elections because they're too dense to see the handwriting on the proverbial wall. It is 10 minutes to 8 o'clock on The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Oh, that's not our legendary lyric, though, is it? Which means we go into our 8 o'clock hour. We still haven't played our legendary lyric song of the week. When you hear this lyric going in or coming back from commercial break, be the 10th caller. You might win a couple of great prizes here. Here's your lyric. I'm 5 years old. It's getting cold. I've got my big coat on. I hear your laugh and look up, smiling at you. Can I hear your laugh and look up smiling at you? That is a song from a huge artist, and we'll tell you why we picked this lyric when we play the song sometime within the next 45 minutes. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson. Let's get to your 8 o'clock headlines, hour number three. Welcome to hour number three of the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you, Taylor Swift. It's always nice beginning the hour with that kind of endorsement. From
the best day, look at the mountains coming out, and we're supposed to get sunshine in some areas and dry weather. Wait till you see the weekend. If you didn't get sunshine, you're going to get it Saturday and Sunday, John.
Yes. And I'm waiting for that. I mean, as much as we complain about the weather, you know, it's cold, it's gray, it's drizzling, it's miserable out there, it's damp. Okay. So correct. From November through March, yeah. However, we're not burning down, and we're not under 2 inches of ice and 3 feet of snow like much of the eastern half of the United States. So there are some factors, you know, that that balance these things out. You are listening to the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show. Heard this and every single day of the work week, 6 till 9 a.m. Then we play a highlight reel, 5 a.m. the day following. We have been, speaking of following, giving you the latest info on what we hear coming out of Los Angeles Pacific Palisades. Here is what we are currently looking at. The Pacific Palisades fire has consumed almost 3,000 acres. Now, normally when you're talking about wildfires and 3,000 acres, that's tiny because it's the middle of the woods somewhere far, far from any home or, you know, sign of mankind. This is 2,900 acres of people's neighborhoods. There's a second fire. It's called the Eaton Fire. That's destroyed 1,000 acres. The third fire, called the Hearst Fire, has ravished 5,000 acres. There are three large mandatory evacuation zones surrounding Topanga State Park and Tuna Canyon Park. Evacuation warning areas include Malibu, Pepperdine University, which is there perched on the slope overlooking in Malibu, overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Olive View UCLA Medical Center. So this is still something that that they don't even come close to having a handle on. And people are just trying to get out of the area while they can. Mayor Karen Bass from Los Angeles is safe. She's in the nation of Ghana. So 7,500 miles is safe. And when we hear more, we will let you know.
Getting an update on some of the meteorologists in the L.A. County area, John. They're saying once we get through these fire Santa Ana winds, I guess tomorrow's going to be the worst of it with the winds and what you're saying and hearing today. Next week, they're getting into their first big rainstorms of the season for several days, right after all this.
Well, I wish those rainstorms would come a little bit sooner. They've only had like an inch of rain, less than an inch of rain since May.
Yeah, and concern, of course, is going to be mudslides and landslides and saturated ground after a couple of days, heavy-duty rain showers. Big challenges.
All right. A couple years ago, I had just landed SeaTac Airport and was heading over to the parking garage to grab an Uber. And before I ordered up the Uber, which only takes a couple of minutes to arrive at SeaTac, I decided to check out the taxis that were lined up. Because you have to walk by the taxi stand before you hit the rideshare area. And what do you know? The taxi cab was $10 less than an Uber. So I ended up taking the taking the taxi cab. And I'm thinking as he's driving me home, why is a taxi cab cheaper than an Uber? I mean, one of the reasons for rideshare is that it's so much less expensive than a taxi cab. And it's so much more convenient. What changed? Well, what changed is that jurisdictions like the city of Seattle began mandating certain costs and certain wage conditions. And when you added it all up, Uber was no longer a bargain. It was no longer a better value than a taxi cab. I bring this up because starting a week ago, Uber drivers and Lyft drivers earn a guaranteed wage based on time and mileage. For trips within the Seattle city limits, drivers earn at least 68 cents a minute. 68 cents a minute that the driver's carrying a passenger. Plus $1.59 for every mile. Even if it's a relatively short trip, say a mile, the driver gets a guaranteed minimum of nearly $6 per trip. Again, even if it's just, you know, just take me 8 blocks away. For trips outside of Seattle, drivers earn almost 40 cents per minute and $1.34 for every mile driven. This is not because the drivers demanded it. It is because activists insisted on it. And you look at this and say, well, no wonder the costs are so high. Why are they doing this? Is it because they're pro-Uber? No, they're not pro-Uber. The city of Seattle is pro-union. They support the taxicab industry. And that's what we're looking at here. This is the government mandating these higher wages for drivers, even if it means less overall business, because they'll be carrying fewer trips. Fewer people will see the need to grab an Uber when they realize, hey, this isn't the bargain it was 5 years ago. What's going on here? So now Uber and Lyft will cost even more than they cost last year or the year before. And last year or the year before, Uber and Lyft were decidedly more expensive than grabbing a cab. That's the way the left wants it. What was once a very simple and much less expensive way of getting around, the government started imposing mandates so that it wouldn't be so simple and it wouldn't be so inexpensive. And so as a consequence, they are trying to depress business for rideshare companies so they can increase the taxicab industry's take of the market. And of course, they're going to use all sorts. Well, this is, you know, this is for climate change and global warming and a lesser carbon footprint from cars. People will think twice about taking rideshare. No, this is all about grabbing a cab instead of hailing a cab instead of ordering an Uber. So that is what's behind the latest change in state law. All right, it is coming up on a quarter after eight. We have a winner, legendary lyric winner. That would be Andy in Puyallup. Andy has won not just two, but three tickets to the KVI Inauguration Day Watch Party on Monday, January 20th. Starts at 7 o'clock in the morning. And, of course, 2 hours into that, we'll be broadcasting live from Stempy's Bar and Grill in Kent. We've been wanting to do a event in South King County for a long time.
Huge.
And so that includes a breakfast buffet and coffee and other beverages and a $50 gift card for Andy from Daniel's Broiler.
You can do breakfast, go home, take a nap, go have some dinner that night.
Yeah, that's right.
Make a day of it.
If you want to join us, it's limited tickets. There's only so much room at the Bar and Grill. And so buy your tickets now, KVI.com, scroll across the top, and you'll see Inauguration Day event.
Okay, so you always have a story about the song, Let Me Know, and let's play it so then you can explain.
Okay.
Right.
So
you want to hear
we it. Chose this song, Taylor Swift, called The Best Day. Written and recorded by Taylor Swift for her second studio album, she wrote The Best Day while she was touring in the summer of 2008. So 16 years ago, she recorded it in secret, dedicated the track to her family, particularly her mother. And how better to do that than revisiting great childhood memories? Everyone out there remembers when they were 5 years old and had their big coat on, and what did your mom always say while zipping up your coat? Chin up, chin up. And then you look at her and smile and then out the door. I thought about this song because, as you know, right before Thanksgiving, my mom passed away. We posted Mom's obituary in the Seattle Times on Sunday. It's running again today, but we have it posted on the KVI website for you as well. And since Mom became kind of a part of the show over time, there's her picture, and just click on Mom's picture with her nice cross pendant there, and read the obituary, and I hope you enjoy it. Her funeral will be at Sacred Heart Parish in Bellevue on Friday. That's going to be Friday at 11 o'clock at Sacred Heart Parish. So I thought, Yeah, how about finding a song that was a hit by a famous artist that was a tribute to their mom? So there you have it. That's for Mom on this 8th day of January. So, again, go to KVI.com and click on Mom's picture if you'd like to read the obit. Many of you became very familiar with Mom over the years. I'm so happy, so glad, so gratified. God let me be in her life for, my goodness, Mom made it almost to 91. Mom was with us a long, long, long time. It is 19 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock. Here's Philip J. Vandervoort III, his favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists right around the corner as the Commute with Carlson continues. Good morning. Hey, just a few dictators here and there, but welcome back to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. You got 24 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. And once again, a big congratulations go out to Andy Puyallup, won our KVI Legendary Lyric Contest this week. Philip J. Vandervoort III, your favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists. What do we got?
Get to the socialists in just a moment here, but I do have an update on some of the L.A. fire situation this morning. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort, L.A. Emergency officials are kind of in the midst of a press conference where multiple jurisdiction heads or department heads are speaking. And some of the news media, several different news media reports. I'm looking at one from KTLA out of Los Angeles that says at least two people have now died in the California wildfire firestorm that is going on right now. Many others injured with significant injuries. So those haven't been quantified quite yet. And there is now a fourth fire that has emerged. None of the fires have containment. More than 1,000 buildings destroyed per L.A. County Fire Chief Maroney. That is some of the latest. Charles Payne, who you know from Fox Business News.
Oh, yeah.
Fox News interviews and segments and things like that, focusing on business. He posted overnight that he was flying into LAX, descending into LAX right now. He took a picture from his seat on the plane looking down on the lights of the city and a very massive ring of fire to the north side of Los Angeles and lots of smoke. He writes, descending into L.A. right now, I can smell the fire. Many on this flight in panic or heartbroken, knowing their homes are already gone. Now for the socialists on social media. Here's one from an award-winning writer.
Yes.
And a person's name is Matthew Todd, 58,000 followers, and followed by different groups that are related to climate defense and climate defiance. So Matthew Todd posted this yesterday. Scientists have warned us about climate crisis for over 40 years. Oil companies have suppressed the facts. Billionaire media outlets have fanned doubt. Politicians have failed. All of them have committed a crime against humanity. Hashtag Pacific Palisades. So certainly there's going to be a fair amount of that from that wing of the Democratic Party political spectrum that this is going to come down lock, stock, and barrel to climate change. And then to maybe go back to something I'd seen on another post related to this press conference that's in progress right now in Southern California in L.A. with the emergency officials. There seems to be no origin or cause so far or source of how these fires started. So that is still yet to be determined. We'll have to see what those authorities make of that.
I hate to sound cynical, but when I hear that, authorities have no idea how these fires started. Increasingly, I say to myself, oh, I bet they know how they started. They just don't want to release it.
Yeah. That's always a possibility.
I hate
on.
To say I didn't used to feel that way. Now I do. Yeah. Now I do.
There's going to be so much attention on this story. We have people with the ability to capture video on their phones if there's an attempt to try and either cover up
everybody's
or downplay, right?
Everybody's
downplay what ultimately is the source of this. There's a good chance that somebody somewhere is going to be able to generate evidence and, you know, timestamps on video recordings and things like that, geolocation, and all these other things that go into video recording that will show us some evidence of time, place, location, and and possible causes. So that does make it more difficult to try and cover up or alter possible sources. Now, one of California Governor Gavin Newsom's communications directors, a deputy director for rapid response with the California Governor's Office, has been sparring with Ari Hoffman on X, as Ari has been criticizing California for not being faster with a 747 airplane firefighting tanker. And Brandon Richards, who turns out is a Newport High School graduate, but has been down in the state of California working for the governor's office, is going back and forth with Ari and saying that California had built up the largest aerial firefighting fleet in the world, and new C-130Hs are strategically located throughout the state at Cal Fire bases to mobilize when needed, adding to helicopters, other craft, firefighters are ready to protect Californians. And apparently this individual with the California governor's office, Brandon Richards, has been going after other conservative talkers and conservative pundits on X. But right now those planes cannot fly because of the incredibly high wind conditions that they've got. They have to wait until those winds back down before any of those planes can fly. So they've got them. They still just certainly can't use them.
And that whole 747 idea, remember, that's gone. We had it in Moses Lake. Then it was sold to the guy in Texas, and they were like, wow, this one jetliner alone could probably put out an entire forest.
Well, and this would be an example of, you know, if you want a plane that's going to be able to withstand heavy winds, it would be a jumbo jet.
Thank you.
And so this...
And I think it's the delivery portion of what comes out of that 747 jet to get to the preferred spot on the ground, and that's why they're waiting with the wind conditions as they are right now.
By the way, the mayor of Los Angeles, the reason you haven't seen her in front of the microphones is she is in Ghana.
Oh.
And
is this Karen Bass?
Is
that her
Karen
name?
Bass.
I'm trying to remember her name. Yeah, okay, I do have it.
And apparently... she's in no hurry to get back. Nothing about catching a flight immediately to return. There's a controversy there about there's a shortage of water or even a complete absence of water in the fire hydrants. And the guy who ran against her for mayor and narrowly lost blames the absent mayor, said, you just start asking, why don't you call the mayors out of the country and ask her, get an answer from her. So she's probably going to have to be doing some damage control because this fire is turning out to be one of the worst ever. While she's on a taxpayer-funded trip with the Biden administration, in, again, Ghana, 7,500 miles away from her city, which is less and less of a city with each passing hour. It's 31 minutes after 8 o'clock to Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KV. Santa Ana winds blowing a little too hot. This is Randy Newman, I Love L.A., written at a time when everybody did love L.A. The place to go is right around the Olympics in the 80s, you know? And anyway, it is 22 minutes to 9 o'clock. We got an update. Again, updates coming almost by the minute, as this is very much a real-time story.
Yeah, this is a Pierce County story about traffic.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. We also have a traffic update. We got traffic problems of our own. They have nothing to do with wildfires.
This just popped up. Wanted to let KVI listeners know. This is in the Canyon Road area, Fredrickson. All southbound lanes, Canyon Road, are closed from 143rd Street East. A really bad car collision, and the Sheriff's Department has it shut down. So that's going to be an area to avoid on your commute this morning. Again, all southbound lanes closed. Canyon Road at 143rd Street East. There's one car, two doors are ripped off. Another car is on its side. That's how catastrophic this crash was on Canyon Road. So avoid that area for at least another couple of hours.
Again, this is Canyon Road, where, Phil?
Southbound lanes closed at 143rd Street East. There so Canyon Road East. There, okay. Fredrickson area of Puyallup.
Okay. Is there a political angle at all? Is there anything political about the terrible fires, now four separate fires? And as I think a reporter said with some accuracy, this is not just a wildfire, it's a fire storm. Four separate fires burning, and that the sum total is amounting to a storm in Southern California, Pacific Palisades, San Bernardino, Malibu now, and North Los Angeles. In August of 2020, ProPublica did an important story, very thorough, long, deep dive into how wildfires in California are exacerbated, what makes them so intense. And the conclusion they came up with is that policies, government policies at the national level, the state level, and the local level, all contributed to the intensity of wildfires by minimizing the use of controlled burns that would limit the scope of wildfires when they do occur. Now, there's nothing new under the sun about prescribed burns. Indian tribes have been doing that in North America for thousands of years. The other reason for burns is not just to limit the scope of natural occurring fires, but also to get rid of the thick growing underbrush that acts as kindling and makes the intensity of wildfires far, far worse. They burn hotter, and they burn out. I mean, not burn, the fire goes out, but they burn outward as a result of thick underbrush. And government policy discourages that. Now, these policies have themselves come, pun intended, under fire, and now you see increasingly government beginning to use what private foresters have always used, which is you get rid of the underbrush so that you don't have these intense fires when they do occur, because they will occur, you know, lightning strikes, fluke accidents and the like. Increasingly, wildfires in up and down the West Coast, Washington, Oregon, California, there have been arsons. Canada has had a problem with arson wildfires as well. So when they do happen, the issue is how intense will they burn? And the answer is very intense if you don't clear out the underbrush, which, again, government policy at the federal and local level has discouraged these controlled burns. All right, to the U.S. Congress. The Laken Riley Act, the first showdown in Congress, a bill designed to identify and detain people who are in the country illegally who commit crimes while they are here. In a lot of jurisdictions, immigration authorities won't pick them up because, well, it's not really that serious a crime. And in many of these jurisdictions, sanctuary cities, they won't cooperate in handing over burglars or shoplifters, drunk drivers, and the like. That would change if the Laken-Riley Act passes. Here's Como 4's Preston Phillips.
The Senate is set to take up the Laken-Riley Act sometime this week. The first bill focused on illegal immigration to pass through the new House of Representatives. So the legislation is named after the Georgia college student who was murdered by a man in the country illegally, previously arrested for theft. The legislation would require illegal immigrants who commit certain nonviolent crimes like theft or burglary to be detained. 48 Democrats voted with Republicans today, including Kim Schreier and Marie Glusenkamp-Perez.
Okay, so think about that one. That someone who is in the country illegally and then breaking into people's homes, should that person, when they're arrested after they've paid the price for the crime they committed, should they be deported for committing a crime while in the country illegally? Three-quarters of the Democrats said no, they shouldn't be. Which, again, I just find stunning. There's nothing remotely extreme or unreasonable about this act. Every member, every Republican member of the Senate has co-sponsored. All the Republicans in the House voted for it, as did 25% of the Democrats. 48 Democrats joined over 200 Republicans to pass the Laken-Riley Act, but that means 75% of the Democrats did not vote for it. What is going on? That's what John Fetterman would like to know. John Fetterman is a liberal Democrat from Pennsylvania who is getting increasingly grouchy with the progressive wing of his party. He hails from a blue-collar background, was mayor of a blue-collar city, even though he actually grew up in privilege himself. And he's just shaking his head at what it has become of his party. He was speaking with Brett Baer on Fox News about this yesterday.
To remind everybody that we have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of migrants here illegally that have convicted of crimes. And why, I don't know why, you know, who wants to defend that, to allow them to remain in our nation through that? And now, if you're here illegally and you're committing crimes and those things, I don't know why anybody thinks that it's controversial that they all need to go.
Do you think that this was one of, if not the biggest issue for this election?
Well, I think if we can't, you know, there's 47 of us in the Senate, and if we can't pull up with seven votes, if we can't get at least seven out of 47, and if we can't, then that's the reason why we lost. That's one of them. That's one of why we lost.
Yeah. I mean, it's just Americans look at this kind of thing. They say, you're out of touch. You don't think this is serious? Boy, I do. The reason it's called the Laken-Riley Act is that a 22-year-old nursing student named Laken-Riley from Georgia was jogging on a trail just adjacent to the campus when she was attacked by an illegal alien from Venezuela, supposedly a member of a notorious street gang there, who illegally immigrated to the United States, was arrested in New York for committing theft, and released. And then he went to Georgia and smashed in the head of this 22-year-old girl after attacking her with a heavy rock. He was convicted, life in prison. The Laken-Riley Act is written to prevent that from happening to anyone else. And of the eight Democrats in the Washington State congressional delegation, only two voted for the Laken-Riley Act: Marie Glusenkamp-Perez and Kim Schreier. Marie Glusenkamp-Perez is from the 3rd District, which is on the Oregon border, southwest Washington, Kim Schreier, district that runs from Issaquah down I-90 corridor into Ellensburg and then over to Wenatchee, Lake Chelan. They voted the right way. Susan DelBene, from the 1st District, very, very wealthy, worth many, many millions of dollars. No, she voted against it. So did Marilyn Strickland. So did Rick Larson from the 2nd District, from Mukilteo up to the Canadian border. Emily Randall, the just elected to represent the peninsula, she's always been radical left. She voted no. So did Adam Smith, who frankly knows better. And Pramila Jayapal, who doesn't know better, from the 7th District in Seattle. So when next time someone says, I don't see a difference between the two parties, remind them, oh, there's a night and day difference between the two parties. Minutes to 9 o'clock Wednesday, August 8th edition of the John Carlson Show. Thanks for being with me today. Before we go, again, an announcement if you haven't already heard. Instead of just watching the inauguration of President Trump on TV in your living room or maybe at the office with a couple of people, why not join dozens and dozens and dozens of kindred spirits and celebrate big time at the KVI Inauguration Watch Party? We're going to do it in South King County. We found ourselves a working-class sports bar and grill. Stimpy's Sports Bar and Grill. So we could broadcast live. And we could have a breakfast buffet, a good one, coffee and other beverages included. And we can all watch the inauguration happen at 9 a.m. And then listen to the president's inaugural speech. That's going to happen, again, a week from Monday. Now, we only have room for 100 tickets, and several dozen are gone already. So hurry up, pick up your tickets. Just $35 includes everything, unless you want a Bloody Mary. That you have to spring for yourself. But for 21 and over, it's going to be a great inauguration watch party in Kent. Stimpy's Bar and Grill. For tickets, go to KVI.com. That's KVI.com right across the top where it says Inauguration Party.
Get off of our property. Goodbye.
Straight ahead. Two of the commutes straight ahead.